at GBQ, we're always counting. Now we're making your time count with this episode of Empower Hour. Start the clock. Today I am with Peter Margaritis, the accidental accountant. He'll explain that later, as well as some other things about himself, I'm sure. Welcome, Peter.
Doug, thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this, to our conversation.
Well, we talked a little bit yesterday. I have too. And it was, we've already joked that we could have just recorded then. But let's start with that accidental accountant. What do you mean by that?
And some of the folks at GBQ would actually vouch for this. Way back when, I was working at Victoria's Secret Catalog. Not as a model, Doug, but I appreciate the thought of that.
Yeah.
I was getting my first performance review. Now, I am a CPA, but I'm not a good CPA. You don't want me doing very detailed work. I just lose. And I go in to get my performance review, and my cheeks hadn't hit the seat when my boss said, how in the hell did you ever become a CPA? CPAs can get down deep into the numbers. I can only get you this far. You're an accidental accountant. And I said, that's the nicest thing you've said to me all year. And then I said, well, when you want something done in this building, who do you ask to go get it done? She says, well, of course you, Pete, because your cheeks are never in the seat. I went, no. I recognized early on, I didn't get into the accounting profession until I was in my late 20s. I recognized that there's a stereotype. CPA, behind your name, creates a stereotype. We're in the information gathering business. So the more that I got to know the people in sales, the people in HR, in distribution, logistics, IT, where they looked at me as, I had lunch with him, or we've gone out for a cocktail, or I've got this relationship with them. They're not looking at me like the guy that's going to come and say no to them, like most people think accountants do. They're going to go, oh, Pete's here. Sit down, have a talk. Let's get some information. And that's kind of been my mantra ever since. Communication is essential. And getting information, we have to create these relationships within organizations. Because in a lot of organizations, and this is kind of a funny joke, but then again, it's not. The head of the finance department is referred to as the CFO, but with inside organizations and outside of the accounting function, they're called the CFO. We've got to start breaking stereotypes. And that's the whole thing about the accidental accountant.
That's some of what we talked about yesterday and some of what I've seen on your website, petermargaritis.com. A lot of things you say about the accounting profession are true in technology. That a lot of times we think about the security people being the department of no. And there's this barrier, as you've talked about, with our language that we, most of us, come to the table with a lot of jargon, and that jargon is a barrier. And I think that's a big part of your mantra too, that mission to improve communications.
It is. You could be an architect, you could be an engineer, you could be an accountant, even a doctor. I had to have some tests done a few years ago, and I get a call on a Friday afternoon, and it's not the nurse practitioner, it's the doc. Now, in my mind, that's not good. And she goes, Peter, we got the test results back, and then went into this tsunami of medical terminology. And I said, doc, I hate to interrupt. Whatever you're trying to tell me, I have no idea. Can you put it in plain English? She paused for a moment and says, Pete, you might have cancer. Thank you. Now I know what I'm dealing with. What's the next steps? But in plain English. And then you need to do this, this, and this, and this. Fine. I mean, it took her that moment to realize that she's speaking the foreign language of medical terminology to me. I don't understand it. We speak the language of accounting. When you say depreciation to a non-accountant, they think that's the value that they lose in the car when they drive it off the new car lot. And the accountants go, no. It's a systematic allocation of an asset over time. Is the response we get back. We have to become translators of a complex language.
And it's hard for a business owner who comes to the table with a passion for their craft, what they make, what they do, what the service they provide, and then come to either their CFO or their CPA firm, or if they're talking technology to their technology provider, and discern what the heck that meant when they need to know enough to make decisions about how to continue on the path that their passion's taken them.
Absolutely right. And you make a great point. It's not about us. We're delivering information. It's about the audience who we're delivering it to. And I was in Atlanta last week working with a firm, and I was trying to get them to tell me who their client was. Now, they have an accounting practice primarily focused on affordable housing. And I'm like, who is your client? And they couldn't have like 100 people. They're trying to, And someone says, well, they're unique and different. Well, describe what unique and different is. They're entrepreneurs. Oh, bingo. And I said, do they speak the language of accounting? And they go, no. And how many times you get frustrated? All the time. You've got to be able to understand that they don't understand that language, because accounting is a foreign language. And you have to be able to come, instead of having them try to understand you, you've got 10, 15, 20, 30 years in this profession, that complex knowledge. You have to be better about taking that complex knowledge. And just for the point of reference, you're not dumbing it down. You're just describing it, putting it in a way that someone without your intellect can understand it and act on it. That's the challenge.
And that dumbing it down, I think, is hard for any practitioner that enjoys their craft, thinks a lot of their knowledge of the craft. And dumbing it down is, well, I don't want to dumb it down, because then I'm speaking dumb, but that's about me, not about the us or the audience. And that's a certainly a block for some people across a lot of these, you know, technology, cybersecurity, application development, architecture, engineering, all of these are foreign languages. And if we don't translate, then it's just like your doctor's story. We don't know what the heck we're hearing.
Absolutely. And you just said it, you know, it's I, me. It's about, I don't know, I think a lot of it goes to ego. And if I'm not talking the language of accounting to my clients, then they won't pay the bill that I'm providing them, because I'm not showing them the smartest guy in the room or gal in the room, versus I think they would pay you a lot more if you were able to translate this language and so they can understand and act on it. But what happens is the client will not ask a question a lot of times to the CPA because they don't want to look stupid. So they'll walk out of the meeting going, and if they're with their business partner, I have no idea what they said again. However, I trust them. And that's half of the battle right there. You've got the level of trust. Take it to 100% and become a better communicator with the issues at hand so they can act on them in a way that they have an understanding, they don't have to have a deep understanding, but just enough, they can go back to the businesses and start applying this information.
We find GBQ's brand attributes. We have 7 attributes: reasonable, personable, savvy, highly motivated, sociable, attentive, passionate. 4 of those directly impact our belief that we should be able to communicate with people: personable, savvy, sociable, attentive. But nobody's perfect. And, you know, to hear what you're saying and apply it, from my perspective, you're the accidental accountant. I'm the better never do accounting. I'm even lower down the totem pole, the accounting totem pole. But it's true for my practice area that if what I say to my clients sounds like a Star Trek episode, I might feel really good about it. But, you know, they don't know what I'm talking about. And I think it's true. You know, I'm client facing. Most CPAs that are in a CPA firm are client facing, but that's true of the CFO and the controller where they're advising. That's true of the CIO. It's true of anybody that you've got to understand the audience and deliver to the audience, not deliver to your own ego.
Absolutely. So I told you that I'm now employed by Oklahoma State University in the accounting program as the director of the School of Accounting Communication Center. And I do have a couple classes I teach. And classes haven't started, but the other day, the IT people were putting in my computer and stuff, and I needed to go down and talk to them. And I was talking to this one person. I said, look, just so you know, I apologize now for some of the stupid questions you think I'm asking, but I don't quite understand your language. So if you can have patience with me and help me, that would be great. And he had this big smile on his face. And he said, absolutely. You're the only person who's ever said something like that to us. So, I mean, we have to go in with the thought that if I'm sitting down with the accountant, but I got another story for you. If we're sitting down with the accountant and we tell them, I don't understand your language, then we should be able to translate it or try to translate it in a way that the client can understand. I referred a colleague of mine from National Speakers Association. She has a wonderful coaching business, and to a small firm in Ohio. She told them during the interview piece that she doesn't speak accounting. And she would like if they could translate it. And they said that they could. They really couldn't. And it got to a point that I got a call from her. It was like 10 months after this relationship started. And she was in tears. And I said, what's the matter? She goes, I just got off my Zoom call with the accounting firm. And they made me feel stupid again. not on purpose, but they know I don't know what the word distribution means. And they can't put it in that language. And it was a lot of that jargon that I have no idea about, because I've got a degree from Bowling Green University in performing arts. I'm running a great business, but the number part I don't get. And then they put the spreadsheet on Zoom. To me, it felt like there was like 1,000 rows, 1,000 columns, and there was zippity-doo-dah around that thing that almost got airsick. And I all I wanted to do was get off that call and throw up and then call you. I said, well, did you do the middle part? She goes, no, I didn't. I just called you directly. I need you to be my accounting whisperer. And I initially said no, but then I did take on that task. And with the firm, I say, you can carbon her on everything. I've said, you don't open it until I get with you so I can understand. So I can translate and then say, now open up that email. Now let's do this, because my job is for you to sleep well at night. And you don't sleep well when you open these emails without some support. So quit opening them up. Let me handle that. And that's been working fairly well since October.
So you help friends and family, but I know that your mission to help accountants communicate better goes much beyond that. You've written some books,
yep.
You're teaching classes, you've got a podcast. How are you carrying that message to the accounting profession?
To some degree, I look at it that when I do my communication courses, that a third of the people there are there just for the hours. A third of the people are there because there's something interesting about it, but they might not change any behaviors. And a third of them, I look that they're there to really kind of find something different, new that they can do in their work as it comes to communication. And when I do my workshops in that, one thing I do is I try to get the whole audience engaged. And we do a lot of exercises. We do a lot of table work. I've been working with people on how to translate. Whatever they're trying to say, find a different way of saying it. But just, I've been doing these courses for 15 years. And the hardest part was getting past the word improv. Like, I'm not here to be funny. I'm not asking you to be funny. The improv is about leadership. Improv is about communication. Improv is about empathy and self-awareness and emotional intelligence. Improv is about collaboration. And let's find ways that I can switch on that light bulb and say, oh, now I understand what improv is as a leadership type of tool.
My perspective of improv is very, very different than yours. I appreciate that explanation. We'll come back to it. But my son, as a junior in high school, joined the improv club.
And oh, really?
Fascinating to learn that it's not just what you think it is from Saturday night. Like, there were real exercises. You talk about table work.
Right.
Real exercises that they went through to improve those skills. And, you know, a lot of times I think, to come back to your topic, is we don't practice communicating. I'm a sports guy, so I learned a lot with my kids stepping into the arts. You know, we watch football films every Saturday morning in high school. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what did you do wrong? What should you have done? How do you get better?
Right.
I don't think a lot of times we have that self-awareness as communicators, particularly when we're client facing. And I don't mean just accountants. I mean, all of us that are at a technical proficiency. So you help people with some of those improv skills to improve their communication style.
Absolutely. And I start with two of my favorite words in the English language. Yes, and. Not no, because, and not yes, but. Yes, and is about agreeing and adding on. It's about agreement, but not always agreeing. It's I'm willing to listen to you. And that's the one thing I work with all my audience is we have to become better listeners. Alan Alda has a definition of what listening is. And he says, listening is the willingness to change. If you're not willing to change, you're not listening because you've got things, biases and things in your head that it becomes a dueling monologue, like our U.S. political system. But if you're willing to change, that's true listening. You don't have to change, but you have to be willing to change. I've got a little bracelet on I wear every day. It's become a way of life. And I say yes to more things. We're going on a journey. I don't know where this journey is going to go, but I'm going to explore and I'm going to find some new stuff. Sometimes it doesn't quite work. It wasn't the right time, or maybe didn't think it all the way through, but I never looked at a situation that I failed in and said, wow, I should have never done that. I take away all the positives that I did learn, no matter how short of the period of time it is. But accountants, I said the word failure, accountants want to be perfectionists. There's no such thing. We all make mistakes. And the more that we can look at failure as an acronym of fail, F-A-I-L, at first attempt at learning, that goes a long way in becoming better in the long run. You have to fail to learn. And those who haven't failed, they haven't learned enough. And they think, I think that that also enhances the overinflated ego. But maybe they have failed and they also don't accept it. We're human beings. It comes down to that. And we make mistakes. Accept those mistakes. Yes, they hurt, but accept those mistakes and do it better next time.
So the yes and is I'm about to take a journey, and the no but, it feels when you say it like a door shut. And that's a, I don't want to step out. I'm risk averse. I'm cautious. Is that fair?
That's fair. Can we do a quick exercise together?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a series of questions. And at the end of each question, I want you to say yes. Okay?
Yes.
Do you want to tell a story with me?
Yes.
Is this a story about GBQ?
Yes.
Is this a story about GBQ and their podcast?
Yes.
Is Doug Davidson a rock star in the Columbus podcast community?
Yes.
See? Okay. Perfect. Now let's do it again. But this time we can use the word no. Do you want to tell a story with me?
No. Point taken.
I got nothing.
And I'll tell you, actually, I'm going to plug something because it's a perfect spot. So we started this podcast for a number of reasons. Tell a little bit of the story. We were doing really well. A lot of businesses were doing really well during the pandemic, but there's a bunch of people, businesses and individuals that weren't. And so this concept of empowering growth really fires us up here at GBQ. We empower growth in our employees, our clients, and the community. And Darcy and I are talking about, you know, the have-nots in town. Mm. And then there's this meme going through the world at the time that business is bad. And we're looking at companies that are innovating, like High Bank. Instead of their blended whiskey, they're making hand sanitizer and Rogue Fitness. Instead of making fitness gear, they're making PPE because the hospitals didn't have enough. And so there's a lot of innovation in the market. Mm-hmm. And there's this idea of conscious capitalism. So we started Empower Hour to tell some of these stories. Fast forward, I'm much smaller in the number of booked podcasts than you are. I think I have like 1% of yours. But anyway, about a month ago, because I'm a rock star in the podcast community here in Columbus, I'm invited to dance in September for the Columbus Dancing with the Business Stars to raise money to feed families. Last year, they fed 5,000 families in 8 counties. And it's interesting, those yeses that got me to do something, the podcast I've never done before, mm-hmm. put me in a spot to be able to help these families and to learn how to tango, which is about like you being a Victoria's Secret model. So we'll have to see how it all plays out. Anyway, that your little exercise there, going to yes, taking that risk, put me in a spot to do something that's fun and it's going to help people.
That's a great story. And keep me informed on how that goes for you. And if there's a video, I'd love to see it.
Yeah, everybody's dying for the video.
Yeah. But we achieve more things when we say yes. I try to work with accountants. It's about when we need to come up with an idea, when we got a problem to solve, there's two types of thinking, divergent thinking and convergent thinking. The first thing we need to do is come up with as many ideas as possible, albeit they can be crazy ideas to give bandwidth. We don't pass judgment. We say we can't do that. We don't have the money. We don't have the people. All those constraints go away. And it's just a rapid fire of ideas. And I want crazy ideas because with safe ideas, I don't get that much bandwidth. Somebody gives me a crazy idea, I've got bandwidth to work from. An example is I was doing this creative workshop for a Fortune 500 company in Maryland. And they had brought their emerging leaders in from the US and Latin America. And the goal of that session was, how do we increase profitability? And I said, raise revenue, cut costs. We have to go deeper. And I set the stage with stage here. This is a mini Las Vegas. And I want crazy ideas to give you bandwidth. Let's have your ideas. Well, their ideas started off way over here being very safe. Well, they were being very safe until this one gentleman goes, I tell you how we're going to increase profitability in this company. We are going to kill all of our competition salespeople. And the room laughed. It got very quiet. And I panicked for about a split second. And then I went, you know, I like the idea, except the problem that the challenge that we'll have is none of us look good in an orange onesie when we go to jail for killing all the cops. So instead of killing them, let's poach them. Let's find the top salesperson in our competition. Let's see if we can offer them more money and a bonus to have them jump ship. And come to find out that the company actually employed that strategy by allowing that crazy thought to get, because crazy, we're not going to execute on crazy. We're going to execute on what we can create from that. But in divergent thinking, it's all ideas. In convergent thinking, then we can bring the devil's advocate out. Then we can be critical. Then we can be judgmental. But in improv, bad ideas are bridges to good ideas. No ideas lead to absolutely nothing. And the more that we can separate our brainstorming sessions into divergent thinking, just give me ideas. Don't give me a story behind it. Just give me an idea, idea, idea. We'll gather them all up. Then when we think we're done with the ideas, we'll take a look at it with another lens, being judgmental about it. And if we do that, people are more likely to give you an idea versus if you're in a meeting and say, give me your ideas. No, we can't do that because we've done that before. No, not a good idea. We tried that. This is the way we always do it. Would you want to give an idea and have me shot down in front of your peers consistently? No.
No.
No, you wouldn't. But this inspires people to give their ideas, know they're in a psychologically safe environment.
What's interesting is we started talking about improving communication. I'll broaden it in technical fields, but from the accidental accountant, really speaking at the accounting profession. And we have, with different words, gone from that into the whole idea of innovation science. So when we look in from an innovation standpoint, good ideas tend to generate small improvements. So we're going to cut costs and raise prices. That's going to increase profitability. There's evolutionary ideas that are a little bit more far out. And then there's the revolutionary ideas, which are those big disruptive ideas. And you just described that with divergent and convergent thinking. That process to just come up and apply good ideas is probably going to get small improvements. But to go crazy, to apply that brainstorming theory, the fancy word in innovation science is ideation. Mm-hmm. Again, there's a science that's created its own language that then is a barrier to entry. But that idea of creating ideas or ideation uses that same exact technique, brainstorming theory, convergent, divergent theory, or thinking or communicating. At some point, you've got to say, you know what, you're right. We're not going to look good in the orange jumpsuits. But if you don't get those crazy ideas out, then you don't have a Tesla, you don't have an Amazon, you don't have those kinds of things. Who would have thought, what, 20-ish years ago when Amazon first started, that we were all real thankful for them during the pandemic? And what would have happened if that crazy idea hadn't happened?
Right. You know, Steve Jobs, I have a frame, talk about the crazy ones, and you have to look it up. It's a long, but it talks about those who don't quite think like everybody else. And this all is part of communication. Communication is speaking, it's writing, it's all visual, it's all inspiring. It's how do we motivate? How do we move people to action? That's what I propose to do with this communication center. This is more than just writing better emails and doing better presentations. It's all of this and then more. I mean, I don't know. I get goosebumps when I really start thinking about this opportunity and thinking about what we can do as a profession if we just create a psychological safety zone within our organizations where we can say things that we're not punished for, that we can be different and be accepted because we bring different attributes. And those different people, like yourself, myself, we've got a lot of ideas. Just listen to my idea. Don't judge it at first. Listen to it. Have respect for it. And then give me your opinion. But a lot of times, what we get about halfway through what we're trying to say, and you can tell the other person's already processing, really not listening, and just ready to jump and say no, because this is the way we've always done. And it's like, okay, if I hear that word, that sentence one more time, I'm going to just scream bloody murder because people are afraid of change. And this whole communication world constantly changes. But there's still some foundations to it that we need to really hone and become better at. And you said it earlier, we have to practice. Yes, Allen Iverson, practice. We have to practice. And how do we practice? Do we think about, we're getting ready to go into a meeting? Are we thinking about what we're really going to say, how we're going to do this? Or getting ready to attend a meeting? Are we thinking about how we're going to approach it? Do we think about our body language in a meeting? Do we think about, I'm presenting, what's my body language? And looking at my audience, what's their body language? And the audience is looking at my body language going, your words have to marry up with that body language. I'm not buying what you're selling. It's very complex, but when we start looking at these pieces and we can put it all together, it can be very powerful, and it is.
See, I hear this from a different lens. Obviously, I have a very different experience set. And a lot of professions, accounting included, are being dramatically changed by technology.
Absolutely.
Artificial intelligence is doing some of the work. Data analytics, there's a number of other kind of technologies, blockchain. They're changing what accountants do, both in public accounting firms and corporations. And the enlightening thing, or the freeing thing there, is that it frees people up. If the technology does the repetitive work, it frees people up for relationships. But if I don't have the communication skills, then the AI may put me out of business. If I do have the relationship skill, communication skills, relationship skills, I'm very likely to thrive in that new world where the technology is doing the work I used to do, and then I'm relating that work to my client.
We've moved from a bean counting profession to an advisory profession. Thank you, AI and artificial intelligence, and blockchain, and all the technology that has evolved over the recent 5 to 10 years. I don't know how much we have changed as individuals within the accounting profession. We're very resistant to change. And working with some groups, they're still living in the 70s. And so I said, how many of you have a 10 key in your office? And the number of hands that go up, I go, well, you know, there's this thing called Excel. And by the way, there's a support group for all of you all. You know, I want to say, how many of you have an abacus still in your office? And I know somebody's going to raise their hand. We've got to evolve as the profession evolves, or we're going to be left behind. There are firms out there who are evolving, and some accounting departments who are evolving, and some seem to be can't get out of their own way, and that's not sustainable.
I'm not an accountant, and the next time GBQ has a social event, I want to be able to sit with my friends. So I'm not going to criticize just accountants, but I think that's true. I mean, I understand where your focus has been because of your career. But I think that's true of any of us. It's true of every one of the cyber analysts and IT auditors on my team from staff level up. If we don't learn to communicate better and don't have that, you mentioned EQ earlier, the emotional quotient, if we don't have that ability to read the room and understand where our audience is coming from, the technology is going to affect us in a negative way. If we learn to be better at those things, then you were better suited for that world, which is kind of odd because you think that more technology is coming. I got to get better at being on the keyboard. No, you got to get better at being with the human.
Right. And being able to look at the financial statements and translate it and tell a story about it. And I had an opinion piece in accounting today a few years ago. The original title was, it's time for us to get out from behind our desk. We've been talking to this profession about being the trusted business advisor. When in fact, we're only the trusted financial advisor. The business advisor would go out, roll up their sleeves, and understand the person's business. They would go in and get, you know, be on site more often than not, so we can visualize this in our head. A colleague of mine was working for a CPA firm in the Baltimore area and said one of her clients' tax returns were done. She goes, she's on the way to my house. I'll just stop. I'll give her a call. And tell her, we'll stop by and drop off her tax return. And when she did, the client went, you're the first person to ever come out here. You want to see my business? All entrepreneurs want to show their businesses. Mm-hmm. All entrepreneurs want to talk about their business. They're proud of what they're doing. She said, absolutely. And she was like raising thoroughbred horses, whatever. She spent 3 to 4 hours learning about the business. She was showing her around everywhere. When she got back to the firm, she shared this story with the partners. You know what the partner said? You are charging her time for that 3.5-4 hours, aren't you? She quit 2 days later. And this story is not that old. It's not that old.
Yeah, that 3 or 4 hours is an investment to the future, not the charge hours for the month.
Right. And you said a very powerful word there, investment. When we look at things as an investment, it's not a cost. When we say the word cost, it has a different feel to it. how much is just be, well, the investment in my time is this much. And someone has said, do you want that much for an hour? No, I want that much for the 30 plus years and the hour. And we tend to forget that we don't just come out. We have to go through this journey and gain knowledge and grow and experiment and stuff. And the more that we do that, the more we experiment goes into how we can run our businesses in a greater depth. It all goes back to what's the baseline here of effective communication skills. And that's a wide swath. People think it's a little bit narrower. It's very broad.
So when I look online at petermargaritas.com, which it sounds like a cocktail, but it's spelled like a condition. So would you spell it for everybody?
It's MARGARITIS, not AS, IS. It should be margaritis. Yeah. But that's too close to hepatitis, gingivitis, and laryngitis.
Like a condition.
Like a condition. So
there's a ton of stuff. 3 books. How many podcasts, Peter?
We're 260, 61, somewhere in that area.
I'm less than 1%. Anyway, the accidental mathematician got that wrong earlier. So we're here at the final countdown. I've got 5 questions for you. We will start with, what did you dream of becoming when you were in middle school?
Stand-up comedian. Actually, I dreamt that in elementary school.
So how far off are you now?
I've done stand-up. You know, by the time I really started trying my hand at it, I was in graduate school, and I was already making some money prior profession. So I dabble in it. I still dabble in it every now and then. I still write comedy. A lot of it I keep to myself. But I still play with it. But the world of improv is much more exciting for me than stand-up.
Yeah. Who inspires you?
Everyone. Before we get started, I said, that's the stumper right there. Because it's not just one person. I mean, my father inspired me. My mother inspired me. My brother inspires me. I have colleagues and friends who inspire me. When I decided to take this job at Oklahoma State and the ability to keep my business open, people were just like, you know, going, this is made for you. You need to do this. You got to do this. I mean, my friends at White Castle, they were all in. I mean, then I guess we're looking for a name. Steve Jobs inspires. I read his autobiography. I don't want to be Steve. I don't want to be Steve. But what he has done and pushed with innovation and kind of visionary. Simon Sinek, who, you know, defined leadership for me in a way that's it's the positive effect that you have on another person. That's true leadership. Yeah, I don't have a single person, but there's a lot of people out there who inspire me.
What is your favorite life hack?
Yes, and.
I didn't see that coming. I should have, but I didn't.
Yeah, it changed my life completely.
What has been your most valuable failure?
I've had a number. And I've had a failure at GBQ, and I walked away with a lot of great information. But my biggest one is when I was downsized at Victoria's Secret Catalog. Mm-hmm. First time I lost a job. And I thought the world had come to an end. And someone said, give yourself a few days, get through the fog. You've got about 3 or 4 months or 7. You're going to find out this was the best thing that could happen to you. And it did. It took a while, but I wouldn't be here now if that hadn't happened. Back in the day, back in the late 90s. So losing my job at Victoria's Secret was my most valuable failure.
I had forgotten to mention you had a whistle stop here for a while, a GBQ as well. A second alumnus on the program. For somebody that feels comfortable with failure, having multiple failures is probably a good thing to course correct and provide different opportunities throughout your life. So just having two to share, and it sounds like you've got more. Sounds like you embrace failure. So that must be an easier question than the inspiration question was.
It was.
And then, you know, just from what I see on the website, you work hard. What do you do to have fun?
Read the tax code. That's the comedian coming out of me.
I'm supposed to say yes and.
No, the liar was more correct. You knew that I was lying about that. No, I do like to play. I like to exercise. I love riding my bike. That's my number one go-to therapy. I like to travel, but not business travel as much. I like the vacation travel, which I haven't had a vacation since 2019. And this year, I have to get away for a week or so in just solitude and just get away from it all? There's been a lot that's happened this past year, the past 3 years.
Well, since 2019, there's we could write books about. Well, there have been books already written about it.
I found some free time in 2020 and 2021 while I wrote my third book. So I should have taken that time to do something different, but you couldn't travel. So I keep myself very busy.
Well, good for you. Peter, it's been an absolute pleasure. I knew yesterday that we were going to have a fun time today, and we certainly have. Thanks for joining.
Oh, thanks for having me. And I can't wait to listen to the episode, and I'll share it with my database.
Awesome.
Cool.
Time's up. Thanks for listening to this episode of Empower Hour. Join us next time by subscribing to Empower Hour on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or your preferred listening platform. Want more GBQ? We don't blame you. Visit us online at gbq.com for the business news and advice that matters most. Who is empowering your growth?